You are listening to Comics Reviews with Rob and Dave.
So you went to Toronto Comic Con.
Yeah, Caroline and I spent our anniversary in Toronto, and so happened that the weekend we're up there, Toronto Comic Con was happening, and that was pretty cool. We just went one day. We went on Friday. It was pretty cool. Got to meet some creators. Amy Chu, Scott Hepburn, Stefan Rue. I can never pronounce these names correctly. I feel bad. I really wanted to meet Michael Walsh, but he, I guess, was there only Saturday and Sunday. That was kind of a bummer, but he'll be at C2E2 next month, so I'll get to meet him there.
And you're going to that?
Yeah, I'm going to C2E2, and then the week before that, going to Indiana Comic Con. So the middle to the end of April will be pretty busy. After I went to Toronto Comic Con and then Heroes and Villains / Walker Soccer Con yesterday, I think I've been to 6 conventions now this year, even though most of them are kind of tiny. But
that's 6 more than I've been.
Yeah, but that's so many for the first 3 months. Like, convention season still hasn't technically started yet, so I'm interested to see how the rest of the year goes. Also, trying to do all this before the baby comes, because not that we can't do these things when we have a child, but I don't know how difficult it'll be and money situation and everything. I would love to bring kid to conventions, so I don't think that'll be the issue, but just trying to do all this ahead of time. It's been fun, but yeah, Toronto Comic Con was cool. It was an interesting setup. So many of the creators were late. It was kind of a pain in the ass. Like, it was weird because Friday, it didn't start until 4 p.m., which I thought was a little weird. And I was like, okay, maybe that's just a thing they do in Canada. I don't know. And I was talking to some of the creators. I won't say which one said the same thing. But they're all like, yeah, creators don't want to work till 9 o'clock. You know, spend 12 hours at a desk or drawing. We don't want to be out that late and then have to come back here at 9, 10 a.m. the next day. So I think a lot of people showed up late, probably left early. So it was just kind of weird that it was set up that way. And apparently we're up there the weekend of Canada's equivalent to spring break, which they call March break. So, I mean, all the kids were off school. It seemed like the, you know, city of Toronto was just absolutely flooded with children on that Friday, you know, morning and afternoon. So I don't know why they didn't start it a little earlier. But regardless, it was still pretty fun. Picked up a few books. It was kind of cool, though, because I picked up 2 trades, and it was 2 for $10 at, you know, at the booth, which turns out to be, you know, 2 for $7.50 American dollars. So kind of worked out well. I was like, oh, I should just do all my comic shopping in Canada. I did hit up the Silver Snail comic book shop up there, which is this comic shop / cafe, and it's amazing. It's one of the cleanest, nicest, most, you know, consumer-friendly comic shops I've ever been to. Very, very friendly people there. And I picked up Paper Girls Volume 2 and what else did I pick up? Oh, yeah, Leaving Megalopolis, Volume 2, Surviving Megalopolis. And those came out to be like 19 or 17 American dollars after the sales they were running and everything. So I was like, wow, everything's so cheap, you know, after the conversion. But it was kind of nice. But no, Toronto Comic Con was fun. Didn't end up hitting any of the panels up. There was a Women in Comics panel I really wanted to see, but we were spent after spending all day just kind of walking around the city, and we hit up the Hockey Hall of Fame beforehand, and that was fun and exhausting. We were there for a couple hours, so yeah, I would like to go back to another comic convention in Canada at some point in Toronto. I know they do Fan Fest, I think it's called, I forget, but that's later in the year. I think it's the same organizers that do that. But
yeah, I see advertisements for FanFest all the time.
Yeah, it's
Stephen DeMille.
Yeah, and it's one of the big ones. I guess it's one of like the really big ones up there too. And then yesterday went to Heroes and Villains Fan Fest / Walker Stalker Con, and it's very much all about the shows, all about the television shows and the movies and stuff. So Walking Dead had a huge presence. Arrow, almost everyone from Arrow was there, same with Walking Dead.
Did you go to the Arrow panel?
No. Before I even get into everything, I'm going to say if my wife didn't find us free tickets, I don't know if I probably wouldn't have paid to go to this, because it's cool to see, you know, all the actors and everything, but I'd probably rather spend my time at a comic book convention that happens to have these actors there as well, like a C2E2 or a Wizard World or whatever the case may be, rather than this, where there really wasn't any comic book presence so much. It's more just focused on the shows. So it's a lot of people who you could tell don't really go to conventions at this thing. So it was a much different vibe. Now we show up early, and cause I don't know why they did this, but the doors opened at 10:30 for general admission. VIP opened 9 AM, but 10:30 doors open, and 10:45 Stephen Amell had a panel. So we showed up early to make sure that we got in time for Stephen Amell's panel, because I really, really wanted to see it. You know, Caroline and our friends, they didn't really, they weren't going to go, but I was all about seeing that panel. That was like the one thing I wanted to hit up, and did not make it in time. The lines were insane. It didn't make any sense. I've been to conventions at the Don W. Stevens Convention Center before. Like, it's not
my
first time at this place, and no other convention has been completely has lacked the organization that this one has. It was incredible. In like the companies that do this all over the world, Heroes and Villains and Walker Stalker. And I don't know how often they combine the two, but like you should know better. Like this is your job to organize and run a convention. That's what you do. And it was completely, nothing like I've ever experienced before. It was just horrible. So by the time I get in, Stephen Amell's panel has, you know, it's in the middle of it. And I go to find the panel room, and it's this sort of open room. And I'm like, oh, God, the sound's going to be terrible. So I go to look, and I cannot get close at all. Like, it's standing room only. You cannot sit down. And I'm so far back that I could see him, and they had a little screen, I don't remember, but you could definitely see him, and you could hear that he's talking, but you can't make a single thing out that he's saying. And I'm like, this is going to be horrible. Like, this, there's no reason a panel should be in like this large ass hallway kind of thing. I don't know. I felt like the layout was completely just wrong. That being said, after I was a little bummed out that I didn't get to see the panel or any other panel, because we weren't going to wait around for, you know, a Walking Dead panel or the Arrow panel if we couldn't get seats, because you had to line up during the panel before to even hope to get seats, or, you know, if you'd even be able to hear what the hell's going on inside the panel. And so we ended up just walking around. And the exhibitors were really awesome, I will say. And the aisle space was so wide that it kind of calmed me down a bit. A lot of times at conventions, you feel too crowded. They try to stuff too many exhibitors in, do it in a smaller space. The aisle space is just horrible. The aisles were really wide. Some of the exhibitors were pretty cool. I ended up getting a couple trades. I found one dude who was selling comics, and he was just selling $5 trades. So I picked up, I picked up X-Factor, Cable, and why can't I think of what else? Oh, Avengers Undercover, which I'm reading right now, and that's really good. But, so they did that. I found some, like, cool soap place that was all, like, superhero and zombie themed or whatever, but they donated all their all you know, proceeds to humane shelters and stuff, and that's pretty cool. And we picked up a few things to hang on the wall for the future baby. So every time we're at a convention, we always pick something up for future baby. So, but I mean, it, like, the environment there, you could definitely tell it's people that don't really do those things, and that's cool. I have no qualms with that. But it's like it's a completely different beast. Like, no, it wasn't a convention like I've ever been to before. Just the way it's set up, and even exiting was confusing. It was just, I don't know, it was weird. And like I said, I've been to conventions at up in Rosemont before, and they've never been like this. Wizard World's there, and they always do like the World of Wheels and stuff like that up there. And I don't know, it's bizarre. If I couldn't find free tickets again, I probably wouldn't go. I mean, it was cool to see the celebrities. Like, I got to see Jeffrey Dean Morgan from 20 feet away, and Katie Lotz, and I forget Nissa's real name. And
Katrina Law.
Katrina Law, thank you. And I did see Katie Cassidy. And so, I mean, like, Sean Gunn and Michael Rooker were there.
Oh, they were there?
They were there, yeah. Not James Gunn, but Sean Gunn, his brother. But yeah, no, they were there. And I was kind of tempted to maybe get a picture autograph for Sean Gunn. It was $20, but...
Because if it was James Gunn, you could say, between me and you, what do you really think of that Justice League trailer?
Could have asked Sean Gunn, too, and be like, speak for your brother, please. but... No, it was cool seeing the celebrities, and like, just walking by all the booths, you could tell, I mean, they're making money hand over fist, so there's really no reason that they shouldn't be happy. I mean, some people were only charging like $20 for autographs and photos, and then, you know, Stephen Amell, some of the other higher end, you know, upper echelon of the celebrities there, I guess, were charging $50-$60. Willa Holland was there, but I didn't see her. There was a crowd. I couldn't actually see her. But like the way the celebrities were interacting with fans, it was kind of cool watching that too.
John Barrowman was there, right?
John Barrowman was there, and
did he dye his hair or did he have the gray hair?
No, his hair looked brown. I think he was at his booth, and I walked by, and I was curious how much he was charging, and it was a little more than I wanted to pay.
$900.
He was talking, joking around with a lot of fans and whatnot. He had his own panel that I really, really wanted to go to, but again, the panel room was just such a clusterfuck that it wasn't worth it to me to even attempt it. But no, John Barrowman was there. So was Neil McDonough. Is that who was that?
Yeah, I think so.
But he had a booth, but I didn't see him. So I don't know. But I saw David Mazouz, and he was there. Yeah, but he was also at Toronto Comic Con too. Alfred was at Toronto Comic Con.
Oh, but, neat.
But yeah, David Mazouz was there, and Robin Lord Taylor, who plays Penguin.
Yeah,
he had a crazy long line. I know. Wow. I don't know if he's... I'm pretty sure he's from Chicago, or he at least went to school in Chicago. So I think he has a big Chicago following too. But he was also on Walking Dead for a few episodes too. So but yeah, it was cool seeing the celebrities there. And I wish I could have met someone maybe, but I don't feel like spending that much money.
He's from Shoeyville, Iowa.
He's from Iowa, okay. I think I'm pretty sure he went to like Loyola or Northwestern or something. I know he went to school in Chicago. But he's a Midwest boy, I guess, so. Like I said, you know, if can't find free tickets next year, I'll probably skip out on Heroes and Villains. But we did enjoy ourselves after all was said and done. So just not the type of convention I'm used to. It was good.
Yeah, what was I going to say? You mentioned C2E2, and I saw something, was it Frank Miller's going to be there, and Stan Lee?
Yep, Stan Lee's last C2E2 appearance, because he's stopping conventions after this year. He's an old dude. Frank Miller is going to be there, but I don't even know how much he's charging. You have to buy tickets in advance to get his autograph, and no.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't love the man's work, but yeah, I don't want to spend money to meet him. Stanley, you have to also pay to meet, but most other, almost every single other comic creator, you probably just walk up to their artist alley table and have a conversation with them and just get their autograph. But they're not celebrity like Frank Miller or Stanley. You know, it's not the same. Not to knock the creators, because I'd much rather see them than anyone else at these conventions. But I'm saying it's as far as a general public celebrity status goes. You know, Frank Miller and Stanley are just a different level.
I was gonna ask if like the celebrities that have their that charge like $60. How much do they get it? Do they get everything, or they, if the comic convention gets money too?
I think they get everything, because I think what happens is I've heard this is how a lot of conventions run. They kind of give them the option where the convention says, we'll fly you in, we'll pay for your hotel, but you have to give us a cut of your profit. So, or you could, you know, or it's, you know, we're not going to pay you at all. You show up, we'll advertise you, and, you know, we give you no money, but you get to keep 100% of everything. So I think last I heard a couple of years ago at C2E2, and this is all conjecture, right? So I don't, you know, it's nothing official really, but from what I understood, most of the actors, actresses, the, you know, authors or whatever the case may be, coming in that were there strictly for the signings and photo ops, were choosing to, you know, get 100% of of their money. You know?
So they don't get paid to go to these things.
I think sometimes you do. It's probably, I mean, I'm sure individual contracts are different, but I don't know. Maybe if you're not as popular of a celebrity, you might want to have them kind of have the convention kind of put you up. But, you know, if you're Jeffrey Dean Morgan, whose line was just unfathomable yesterday, I'm sure you're probably going to want to keep 100% of what you make, you know, rather than have the convention fly you out or whatever the case may be. So I don't know.
Yeah. Cause I was just thinking, you know, when, you know, like if there's like a, there's a movie, you know, like Affleck is Batman, then he has to fly from one country to the next promoting it and going to all these events. And I believe that's all just part of their contract, just in, you know, unless they have something different I'm not aware of, but just that signing could be it on, too, yeah. You know.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. You have to make X amount of convention and media appearances, and
it all falls under the line of playing that character where you're promoting it, so that's part of the deal, you know.
Yeah, yeah. There was one. Oh, Ron Perlman was there yesterday. There was one. God, I can't remember who I was referring to. There was one celebrity that was there. And, oh no, it wasn't there. I was talking about Indiana Comic Con coming up, and Charlie Cox is going to be there. And it was a conversation I was having with Caroline, though, on the way home from the convention yesterday. But I was saying, like, it's funny how this is very specific to, you know, like, comic book related properties that you can hold these conventions, where they're not quite comic convention. They're not comic conventions, but, you know, they fall under the same general umbrella, I guess. Like, because Charlie Cox, you know, he's making an appearance at Indiana Comic Con, so he was flying in or whatever the case may be, and do your photo ops and autographs. But it's funny because before that, you know, I was, you know, you think like, well, he was on Boardwalk Empire. They're not doing Boardwalk Empire conventions. You know, it's like a very specific to this type
comic stuff.
Of, yeah. to these properties. So it's interesting to see that. And I'm sure the celebrities love that too. Like, this is a world they probably, they may or may not have been aware even existed, you know? So being a part of that, I don't know, it seemed like everyone was just enjoying themselves with the fans, that from what I could see. So it's cool. Shall we move on to books? So I picked up Spider-Woman Volume 2 in Toronto, and I read it yesterday, and I picked it up, and I could not put it down. I just flew right through this book. And
was there something wrong with your arms?
No. At least I couldn't. I mean, it felt like there was. Like, they wouldn't move. They wouldn't allow me to put the book down. But no, but it was. It's so this book, it's by Volume 2. It's Dennis Hopeless and I think Javier Rodriguez and Natasha Bustos is the artist on one of the issues. There's six issues in here. And it's from a few years ago when Dennis Hopeless took over the book. It was right after the Spider-Verse event, I believe. And, so Jessica Drew quits the Avengers. She doesn't want anything to do with the Avengers, kind of just do her own thing, help people the way she wants to without being tied down to, all the Avengers tape, like red tape or whatever you could say, I guess. And so she's trying to find ways to help people and finds herself in a mess. It was a police training course that she didn't know was happening, and she thought it was a real mugging by some robotic supervillain. So she goes and beats the crap out of this guy that turns out to be a police officer and in the suit during the demonstration. She winds up in jail for 12 hours, and she's never charged with anything. She's kind of being held there and ends up playing a game of charades with the inmates to pass the time. It's the whole thing is just really the whole tone of the book. It's artwork is really, I'm trying to think, it's very modern in its style. Javier Rodriguez he goes from these standard panel pages to these very intricate layouts where you got to kind of follow along with the word balloons and everything. It's very, I like how he can switch it up like that. And Dennis Hopeless is he's a very good writer. He's one of my favorite current X-Men writers, and I've been kind of on this big Dennis Hopeless kick lately, and he's very lighthearted, but he knows how to write these serious, heavy beats as well, without losing any of the impact to the humor, but the amount of levity along with it. It's just, it's a healthy balance. But anyway, so after she gets out of jail. Not really. She's being, held at the police station. So actually she leaves. Ben Urich approaches her and is like, "Hey, you want to help? I want to help you help people." At first she's kind of resistant. And then turns out she finds out what he wants to do. He's looking into these cases where it's not really being reported by the police, but all these supervillains, like, they're losing their loved ones. Like, they're just kind of disappearing. You know, with their wives or daughters or whatever the case may be, they're just kind of disappearing. And Jessica Drew is like, maybe these women don't want to be found. Maybe they're caught up in these things and they just don't want to be around people. And so they end up finding one of the supervillains, Porcupine, and I shouldn't even say supervillain. He's like D-list villain, but and he's in the middle of robbing a bank, and it turns out person who's holding his wife and or his girlfriend and daughter hostage, so he thinks, is making him commit these crimes. And he wants to go straight. He ends up joining up with Jessica Drew and Spider-Woman and Ben Urich the rest of the book. And he's like this third, just like, he's insane. It's amazing. Pure comedic gold. Because he's just this dopey dude who wants to do the right thing, but trouble just seems to find him no matter what. And his, like, instincts, he wants to do good, but his instincts are just to just ruin things. And, like, it's all unintentional, but it gets them into a bit of trouble. It turns out the women are being held by another woman who, not really being held, I shouldn't say that, but they're part of this little village in, seems like Westchester, New York, and they kind of built a life for themselves, getting away from the supervillains and everything like that. And it was a cute little story, just seeing the other side, because you don't you have the standard expository hero and villain show off, but villain as they're in the middle of the fight and he's like, well, you're gonna lose and I will explain to you why I'm doing what I am doing anyway, ha ha ha. And like, you hear a little bit into like the villain's mind sometimes in these books, but you don't see the way what they do affects their family and loved ones. So it was like a really cool story on just seeing a different side of how these crimes affect other people who are just tangentially related. Book's a lot of fun. Artwork is absolutely gorgeous. Again, the colors are really good. Who's the colorist? Let me find that, because I want to credit them. Colorists were Javier Rodriguez, Munsa Vicente, and Vero Gandini. So, yes, they're all lovely colorists. Now, definitely check it out. This is pre-Secret Wars, by the way, because after Secret Wars, Jessica Drew returns, and she's super pregnant. And that's a big storyline. And those issues are really good, too. But this is before all that happens. She has a new uniform and a new life and a new, you know, attitude, I guess. And it's just the beginning of the change in the character. So yeah, check it out. Flash number 19, Barry Allen finally revealed himself to Wally West. Of course it went wrong, because you don't fucking reveal yourself to people, even if they're your partners. You went against your better judgment. Every single person he reveals himself to either hates him or dies. That's where we're at. But that was a really fun issue with them teaming up with Captain Boomerang, trying to get away from the Weavers and everything. And I keep falling behind with the Flash, and then I catch up and I'll read a couple issues all at once. And I'm like, oh man, why don't I keep up with it? But I kind of enjoy reading a few issues at once like that. Just the pacing of the book, it feels more fulfilling, I guess. Not that it's bad in single issue form by itself, but I just the way the Joshua Williamson writes the stories, I guess, very conducive for that style of reading.
Captain Boomerang is going to be coming back to Arrow or something. But I say they should do a crossover. They should bring the Jai Courtney Boomerang on.
That would be something.
In Action Comics, I guess the big deal is that they merge the old Superman with the new Superman. The new 52 Superman with this current Rebirth Superman, which is actually the old Superman.
Yeah, that's pre-Flashpoint Superman, right?
Yes. And, so that's pretty much what happened.
And we found out in 975 that Clark Kent was Mixtoplick.
I don't know.
Because now after hearing it on Supergirl, I can't pronounce it any other way, even though I'm pretty positive that's not the way it was pronounced on
Al Ghul. Yeah. So. Whoever made up that name should be shot in the head.
But was it better than 975? Because I didn't enjoy that issue.
Yeah, I guess so. Just for the fact it wasn't revealed, you already get over the fact that it's like not that like impish asshole. You know, it's yeah. It was kind of a letdown, because you're thinking, yeah, it'll be somebody that's actually important.
Yeah.
And it's like they're just like goofing on you by making it that character. And then but yeah, I mean, I guess they're like mixing those two characters together. So I guess that's their way around like the new 52 stuff.
Yeah, that'll get people to stop complaining, but that'll probably just get people to complain even more, actually.
And I'm sure more is going to be revealed, too, with the, I guess, you know, because of the Flash stuff with Batman coming up.
Uh-huh. True, yeah. The way that the Flash ended, too, leading. It sort of had a. He's like, oh, I remember Thomas Wayne Batman killing me and during Flashpoint, the events of Flashpoint or whatever.
Yeah, so. Reverse Flash.
Yeah. So I'm finally happy we're going to get some answers with that, hopefully. Hopefully there are some answers, and it's not like Night of the Monster Men where it was six issues of, you know, turning its wheels for no reason.
They actually made that its own trade paperback. Just that
you want to know event. What you want to know what's even worse? They didn't just make it a trade paperback. That got the hardcover treatment.
Yeah.
That's offensive.
Cuz I'm wondering how well, I guess how many things did that span? Like six stories?
Six issues.
Okay. I guess that's enough for a book. But it's just weird to think that they only took that. I guess.
Well, it is a I don't want to say good standalone story because that would give that story more credit than it deserves. But it is a quote unquote good story in itself that it's a standalone where you can hand that to someone and say, read this, and it's a complete story.
And one will get confused.
Yeah.
Because it's all that stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas sometimes you read the books and then it's like you don't know what's going on.
Exactly, you know, because you're in the middle. It's, you know, you pick up a Grant Morrison Batman trade, and it's a complete story, but it's really part two of his, like, nine-part epic, or, you know, whatever the case may be, so...
Main character dies, and you don't know, you read Batman and Robin, and you don't even know, and you just read the next episode volume, and then you see, wow, this Robin died, how'd that happen?
I'm still... excited that I don't know how I did it, but I avoided all spoilers during that whole thing. People are like, something crazy happens to Robin. I kind of assumed what would happen, but I didn't hear it. I avoided the internet. I didn't hear anyone talking about it at the comic shop. I was kind of in and out, and I read it, and it had the full impact for, you know, Batman Incorporated issue number 8.
It's hard to avoid that kind of stuff. Like, I know, the superhero news people, like, it's the same people from, like, Modern Myth Media, and he was saying that he avoided the trailer the whole day so he could do this matter-of-fact reaction with his co-host for the Justice League trailer, and he was actually able to avoid watching it for, like, a whole day.
Oh, wow.
Which is pretty spiffy, because even if, I mean, everybody's gonna watch it. Even the people that want to hate it, they're still going to be curious to see what's happening.
Unless you're on complete trailer lockdown, which is hard if you're going to see movies in the theater, you know? Like, I tried avoiding Star Wars trailers a couple years ago, but every time I went to see a new movie, they'd show a, you know, trailer for Force Awakens. I'm like, God damn it, come on. So, sometimes, like, you just can't avoid it. But, yeah. And it's tough, especially when you run a podcast or a website or anything like that, where you talk about these things and you write about them. And, you know, it may or may not be your job for a lot of these people to talk about that stuff. So,
yeah. I mean, I guess they wanted to give, like, a first reaction or something like that. Like an immediate reaction, like they taped it as they were watching it for the first time. But, yeah, I mean, we still don't have the answer for the three Jokers thing, right?
No, and that I was thinking about that too, because I still remember in an interview Tom King saying to read issue 9 of Batman, and, you know, there'll be something in there, and there was nothing in that issue that you can take away for that. I mean, it's a cool idea because it's making me excited for that storyline, but at the same time, my attention span has been getting worse and worse when it comes to things like this, so it's I'm getting to the point where I'm just like, will I stop caring eventually if they don't touch upon it? Plus, these books come out twice a month. I feel like you can get to these storylines a lot quicker. So, but I don't know. focus on that Watchmen-esque storyline and first, and then go from there, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. And I guess Detective Comics, that was all about Cassandra Cain and her mother's Lady Shiva.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, ha ha ha, you're not worthy, you won't kill me. It's like she wanted to kill her or something, or fight her.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's when that's all that was about, pretty much. It was just like...
That was a badass fight scene, and then yeah. Lady Shiva threw Cassandra in the sewer.
And I just remember...
That was after Cassandra beat the shit out of Batman, too. So.
There was Clayface, I remember that.
I really love Clayface in the series. He's possibly my favorite character in this book, and they don't spend nearly enough time with him. I think it's probably, like, any more, it might be too much. I don't know. But what we see of him, James Tynan does a great job of humanizing Clayface. Like, not that he's not a human, you know, but, a lot of times you don't see him this way, as this villain and monster, but he's possibly the most, I don't want to say level-headed, but possibly the most level-headed and earnest character on this team, and I really like him a lot. And then, of course, the reveal at the end when Batman's like, "What is happening?" And then and he's like, "Who else but Ra's al Ghul?" as he appears in the Batcave, and so it'll be cool to see him and Bat square off next issue, I'm sure. But
it makes sense that he had to come back, because it's like, what's her face? Lady Shiva's the League of the Shadows, right?
She's the League of Assassins. League of Shadows, you're right.
And he's the Assassins.
He's the Assassins, yes.
See, Batman Begins had it all jumbled up, because they made it League of Shadows.
And Nolan then DC, did. Yeah, and then DC felt the need to bring that to the books.
Yeah, and then on Arrow, they did League of Assassins.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Now I'm looking back, and what is it? They were stabbing Batwoman.
Yeah, that was another little moment, too. It was happening right in front of her father while he's trapped in the cell. After he warned everyone to get out, he's like, you know, this isn't going to be a... this isn't going to work, like, you don't know what you're up against, all this shit. I was just going to say, you see Batwoman get stabbed, but you find out that that's like a ninja trick they do. Or that was actually last issue, I think they revealed that, but or the beginning of this issue, I don't remember. But what were you saying?
Oh, I was just going to say, I just think it's really funny that Lady Shiva threw Cass in the sewer, because it's essentially throwing her in the toilet.
Yeah.
Am I the only one who sees the humor in that? In the toilet you go. Gonna flush you away. But yeah. Wait, so she got stabbed in Batwoman?
No. She got stabbed here, but I was thinking of when it was last issue when Azrael and Batwing got stabbed, and they're like, "Oh my god," and then, you know, they were stabbed with swords, and then but I think it was Batman or someone revealed that they stab people so that they stay alive, like they purposely miss all vital organs in the body. It's like when you see Batwoman get stabbed, you're just kind of like, oh, you know, they're keeping her alive. Plus, yeah. She has her own book. They're not going to kill her.
Yeah, I was just going to say, just looking at the costume, it's like I did get used to it, but I think part of it is it's like there's less of an emphasis on the purple. I don't really see the purple so much.
For Batman, you
yeah,
mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's really just the underside of the cape sometimes. It's more on the cover that I have, the cover that I'm looking at. It's like super amounts of purple. But I don't know who drew this cover.
But yeah, but that's cool that you got Roz coming back.
Mm-hmm. I'm stoked for that. So yeah. Should be interesting.
Yeah, so does Batwoman come up the same week as Detective, or that comes out on opposite weeks?
Batwoman is once, I think it's going to be once a month.
Hmm.
I don't think it's a twice a month title. I think it's going to be once a month. The first issue, the Rebirth issue was good. The first issue was good. I think we were in between podcasts, in between recording weeks when that came out.
Yeah.
And I don't have it with me, so I don't want to flip through. And I do remember enjoying the coloring a little bit more in this one, this issue. I'm so used to, like, Elizabeth Breitweiser coloring Steve Epting's art that has, like, the specific look to it, or Dean White coloring it, you know. and I forget who the colorist is, but it gives Epting's artwork a completely different dynamic altogether, but you could still tell it's him, but it's a different feel. But no, I enjoyed the story and where it was going. I don't really remember much of what was happening, but I think it's just a once-a-month title, and that came out maybe 2 weeks ago, so probably another 2 weeks. I think we'll get an issue about Batwoman.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Comixology had this big sale on all this Batwoman stuff the other week, I remember.
Yeah, did you pick anything up?
Nah, because I was just like, this is too much.
Yeah, I didn't pick anything up either. What I did pick up this week, though, was Iron Fist number 1 by Ed Brisson and Mike Perkins. And so this is very interesting, because Kunlun's been attacked, and you know, it sort of severs Danny's connection to his chi and his Iron Fist and everything. So that happens all before this book starts. So it starts off in Bulgaria, and Danny's entering these little fight clubs, not unlike what we see in the show, which I'm sure we'll get to later. But he's trying to find answers and, you know, trying to reconnect with the Iron Fist in his chi, and it's not working, so he's kind of traveling all over the place and keeps entering these tournaments and just beating the piss out of everyone. And so he ends up, I think, in Vietnam somewhere, and he comes across this man, Choshin, who he ends up sparring with a little bit, and the dude's like, "You're great and you'll kick my ass, so let's like end it here." But you know, Danny's drinking at a bar, and he's like, what is going on right now? What's the deal? And so Choshin explains to him that he comes from the island of Lushi.
I love Lushi.
And that, he's like, "Hey, come with me and everything will be answered." And Danny's like, "Okay." And then that's how the book ends. They are sailing to the island of Lushi. And so it's mostly Danny beating the piss out of people, a couple issues of him on a plane, and then this interaction. And it's a good first issue, I think. It sets up what's to come rather nicely. But what impressed me the most about this, like always, because Mike Perkins is a freaking brilliant artist, is just the artwork here. It looks absolutely gorgeous. And I think this is such a great book for him to be on, to kind of let loose. And his action scenes, like the one-on-one fights or the two-on-one fights, are very just, I don't know, they're pretty visceral at points, but it's just very, very pretty to look at.
Yeah, the cover kind of looks like Alex Ross, kind of.
Well, that's a different artist. The cover artist is
Jeff Decal,
yeah. So the interiors look a lot different. But you're right, the cover art does have that that very lifelike Alex Ross feel to it. not as painterly or realistic, I suppose, as even though those are two completely different things, but it sort of falls in between the two. No, it's a good, it's a nice cover too. Not indicative of the artwork inside, but no, this is definitely a very good issue, worth picking up. Quick read, and I don't mean that in a like pejorative sense, but it's a good first chapter to a story. And yeah, I think that, you know, talked about Iron Fist comic, I think that lead in perfectly to our Iron Fist Netflix series discussion.
Almost. Did you hear that Alex Ross is going to be in Chicago? Modern School of Film presents the state of the art.
He's from Chicago, I know, but I don't know like what exactly he does around here. No, I did not hear that. When is that happening?
Oh, I sent you it the other day. It's like April 22nd. It's free.
Did you send it on Facebook or?
Yes, Facebook.
I'll have to double check then. I don't remember.
I could share it. That we all will see.
Excellent, excellent.
But yeah, sorry about that. But yeah, Iron Fist. We go from Iron Fist, the book, to Iron Fist, the TV show.
We almost had a good segue. Yeah, so do you want to start this off? I feel like you have a lot. I feel like you have more to say about the show than I do.
Well, I guess. I mean, I really liked it. I mean, in terms of where I would rank it, I would put it. Because I was watching the first season of Daredevil the other day, and I was kind of reminded how intense that was. So it's like, it kind of pales in comparison if you take into account all the fight scenes and how that was choreographed. Like, Daredevil was probably the best. Well, no, it was definitely the best choreographed of all the Marvel shows in terms of the fight scenes, and probably any show on television. It's definitely better than all of the CW fight scenes. You know, you can't compare to it. And, I mean, I would put Iron Fist, I think, in terms of where it would fall in terms of all the four Defenders, I would put that series, I would put it second behind Daredevil. That is how much I liked it.
You and I are, I think, we're probably, like, nearly identical opposites on this, in a sense. Because for me, it goes Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, Daredevil, Iron Fist. And I'm rewatching Daredevil season 2 right now, and I love it a lot, and it's super heavy, and I think it's great. But I still enjoy Jessica Jones the most, and Luke Cage a little bit more. And that's not to knock Daredevil, and I'm not knocking Iron Fist at all by putting it last. But I enjoy it less than I enjoy the other character series, which is weird because once I heard Iron Fist was happening, I think this is the one I was looking forward to the most, because I like Iron Fist as a character probably more than most of those characters.
Well, I mean, I guess I still like Daredevil the best, so maybe that did influence it somewhat, but not necessarily, but just I will say things that kind of make sense and don't make sense at the same time. I think I like the overall, you know, thing with the mysticism, and, you know, and he comes from, like, a fairy tale place or whatever, Hunlun, and I like the fighting, and I did notice that there were times where I'm like, this guy's supposed to be, like, the best fighter, and he's struggling against so-and-so, but then on the other hand, I'm of the understanding that if he just beats up everybody, and it's not even a challenge, it's not going to make for a very interesting television show. Like, even in Daredevil, looking back at it, he was fighting people, and there were still, like, challenges he met along the way, like Nobu almost killed him.
Yep.
And, you know, things like that. And I was thinking about this, because I was like, and I've been seeing that a lot, like, oh, this isn't, the fights weren't well choreographed and stuff like that, and they weren't that intense. And yeah, I mean, I'm gonna defend it a little bit, somewhat, because of the origins of the character, where it comes from with the kung fu is a little bit different. I'm no martial arts expert, but kung fu is going to be different than karate or whatever.
I mean, I have a black belt in subakdo, and it's nothing like kung fu, so, like, I know martial arts, but I don't know that.
Yeah, see, I don't even know what that is, but but from my understanding, kung fu is more like of a theatrical kind of fighting style, whereas, you know, some of the other fighting styles might be more, they look more brutal, kind of. So I could understand that, and it kind of falls in line with the whole, like, chi thing, and the whole, like, way they dressed him up is kind of like this yoga guy, almost, or like this hippie-ish kind of, or hipster kind of thing. Which, I think part of the problem is, if, let's say those two, I'm completely wrong about what I just said about the martial arts, because I don't really know a lot about them, but let's say I'm completely wrong, and kung fu is such a brutal form of it. So if you do all the fight scenes like Daredevil, it's just going to come across as this Daredevil clone, which I know they want to avoid it, because when you think about it on the surface, they're kind of similar in terms of what they do. Those characters are probably the closest to one another, whereas Jessica Jones is more like super-powered or whatever. She's not really like a karate technician. And Luke Cage is just this big guy with unbreakable skin. So it's like the two karate people are Luke Cage and Iron Fist. So it's like they got that, you know, that those things are pretty similar. So it's like if you both have them in this like setting where everything is so like dark and like barbaric, you know, it's just going to come off as a copy of Daredevil.
I understand. I do think the fight scenes were cartoonish in parts. I thought they were entertaining and fun sometimes, and then other times it kind of was a little cringeworthy watching it, and I'm just like, I don't understand the choices they were making. Like, it didn't feel consistent in the fighting to me. And I think, and I get what you're saying about the martial arts, the two characters sort of steeped in his history, but you allow Danny Rand, who grew up with that, to, like, I'm trying to think how to phrase this. He should look better doing it than Matt Murdock should, I think. And Matt Murdock also has a history of being around boxing. Like, you can easily add that to part of his fighting style, where Danny Rand should be just a better martial artist. And I think there's a way to get that across without making it, doesn't have to be violent or anything, but it didn't have to be as, I hate saying the word cartoony because it's so vague, but like some of it was, it did seem kind of cheesy. Like the scene where they're in the hand camp towards like episode 8 or 9, I forget what it was, and the one dude who Colleen Wing was training in her self-defense classes, who ended up like saving them a couple episodes before that, and he's like, oh, hey guys, this is Danny Rand, the guy, you know, who I was telling you about, and then he starts trying to spar with him, and Danny's just defending him, and he's like moving around like Gumby, like it's like it's, and I'm just, like, it wasn't even, it didn't look smooth in the way he was defending the punches or avoiding anything. It looked just so, I hate the word cartoony, but it's cartoony in its sense. I think he suffered too, the character. This is sort of changing subject, but sort of keeping it on, because I'm we get a little glimpse into Kunlun, and it's so very little that I think it affected his story. He didn't feel like as big of an outsider as he should have felt had we been given more of the Kunlun story. And then maybe had we been given it, we'd see more into his training and his daily regimen with the martial arts and the kung fu and everything. And you know, like I said, it was there. But I think it should have been there a lot more, especially because this suffered for the same thing that every single Marvel Netflix show does too, where I think these are all the seasons are too long. After watching this, I can fully say every single show suffered from 13 episodes. I think they should have been 8 to 10. Probably, I think 10 would have been fine. 8 to 10, ideal. Because the first half of Iron Fist felt like the wheels were spinning and it wasn't going anywhere. And then we hit like episode 6 or 7 and it takes off. And I think that Jessica Jones did the same thing. Luke Cage kind of felt the same way too. And that's the way they want to leave these stories out. That's fine. But it almost feels like it's not even a slow burn at this point. It's just sometimes it feels like we're not going anywhere at all. And you either condense the episodes to make it a smoother story, or if you're going to want to take that away, and like work with the, you know, remove that thought, you know, condensing the episodes. You're working with 13 episodes. You had more than enough time to give us some more background on Kunlun. I don't need to see like 12 scenes of the plane crashing over and over again. I understand that's his origin. I get that. And I think seeing it a few times is fine. But give us a little more glimpse, because there's too much empty space in between where they're telling and not showing. And it's a TV show. You shouldn't be doing that. If I want to read a book, then tell me and don't show me, you know? But show me what exactly it is that he's going through and make me feel that he's this outsider of a character when he comes back to New York, fighting his way back to the top of a company that, you know, has his name on it compared to the Meachums or whatever. I don't know.
Well, I guess I think they wanted to just focus more on the on him coming back and how he was, you know, having been away for a long time. I think that's why they didn't show that much of his time away. I think in part they might be saving that maybe for the next season.
Possibly, but I understand that, because you have to, like, this is the now, tell the story of now, and I understand that, but I think you lose a lot of what makes the character what he is now by not giving us a little bit more of the background. Because a lot of people, you know, like, for me, it was less of an issue. Like, I still definitely, I'm defending this point. I still think it suffered because of it. But at the same time, I could see past that, because I do what you just said. I understand what they're going for. That being said, you see a lot of people talking about it. It's like, well, I can't understand how he's this outsider or anything. And I can't knock people's complaints for that, because I feel like it didn't do the job it should have done to make us feel that Danny was as much of an outsider as he is. And you're changing his origin story a little bit, too. So if you know the character, you know a little bit of what he's about, and you see the changes, it's like, well, are you taking away the parts that make him this outsider? Or what, you know, what is it exactly that we're supposed to feel for this character?
I don't know. I felt empathy for the character. I think, I don't know, I guess I would defend the fact of not showing too much of Kunlun. It just adds to that kind of, like, mystique. Of, like, they show it in flashes, they show him getting, like, beaten or whatever as, like, his training or whatever. So it's, like, I kind of like that they didn't show too much of it, because it kind of adds to the mystery, you know, it gives it more intrigue, kind of. And, I do think, you know, when he did come back, it's, like, I could definitely see him as the, you know, the outsider, because he's coming back and they think he's dead. So it's a fight just for him to, you know, get back his identity, You know, just that alone is a, you know, heavy thing to come back from. I mean, he's trying to come back, and, like, the first thing he does is he goes to the company his father owns, and reasonably so, the security calls him because this guy walking around with no socks or shoes on, and he's just like, I'm Danny Rand, the guy that you think is dead from 15 years ago. So it's kind of reasonable for them to question him, but just the fact that those Meachums were such bastards, and they're just like, oh, this guy that looks exactly like Danny, and he's not hurting us even though he could hurt us pretty easily, is just wanting to talk. It's like, oh, let's just throw him into a mental institution.
The Meachums sucked. There was nothing redeemable about the characters at all. Like, I don't feel like, oh, Joy has the story arc, and then we see that she's sort of empathetic to him, and then, you know, goes back, and then blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like, okay, we get this little glimpse into, like, how she's, I don't know, actually a human being, and how humans work, but we don't get much more than that. And I don't, for the amount of time we spent with that family, again, with the first six episodes, I felt like Ward was completely unlikable to me from start to end. I think he had a better storyline towards the end. But there was, by the time that started to kick in and his storyline started to pick up, I was so checked out with that character, I just didn't care anymore. So I could not be bothered to have any investment in his storyline with his dad or with his with the company or you know, when he's in he's seeking help in the mental hospital or anything like that, you know, seeking as if it was his choice, but anything like that. Like, I just didn't feel anything for him, and I don't know if that's because they spent too long getting to that point. I think that's part of it. I also think I'm so used to watching shows with unlikable characters at this point where I have no more space for it in my, like, in my brain to compute this, you know, like, this is a character and we'll see him redeemed at some point. Possibly. He's still kind of an asshole and he's still only doing things because it benefits him, but at least he's doing it on the better side of evil, you know, or whatever. And I don't like that. I didn't need to see him and Danny come together at the end. I feel like Danny could have found a different way to even find the crap in the safe or whatever, and the you know, detailing. What, I don't even remember what it was at this point. It's been a week now, a couple days since I watched it, and I'm losing a lot of stuff, and I think that shows how much a lot of this show is sticking with me. And I don't want to sound like I'm just continually like beating the shit out of the show, because I did enjoy it and I had fun with it. That's all I really wanted to do, was have fun. But like, if I'm looking at it from a critical eye, I think I see a lot wrong with it too. I could separate the enjoyment from us sitting on a podcast talking about the ins and outs of the show and where it went wrong. So sitting down and enjoying it, you know, I definitely liked it a lot, but, like, if we're going to dissect it like this, there was a lot that bothered me, I guess. I do want to watch it again. I do want to see it a second time, watching all these series a couple times and pick up on things here and there. But, like, I think Colleen was a great character. I love her story arc. And it was shitty with her lying to Danny about being in the hand and everything like that, but that made for an interesting story to me. Nothing that Joy did engaged me at all. Oh, they lost the company? Like, boo fucking who? You're still filthy rich anyway. Like, it doesn't... Like, you're not like Danny, where he has nothing anymore. Where he has no family, no name. You know, it's like a DNA test can't be done because he has no surviving family or anything. It's just weird. Like, I felt nothing for them whatsoever.
Nah, I agree. Yeah, I agree with you. Like, I didn't like her character, especially at the end when she's like plotting with Davos.
Yep.
And She's pretty much just saying that, like, everything went bad because of him. But it really was her family that brought all this stuff together. They put everything into motion. But she's just mad. It's like it shows she has no, intelligence of the situation. She's like, oh, well, it's all Danny's fault. Even though my father got his family killed and set him on this journey to begin with, it's all Danny's fault. It's like, you're an idiot.
Well, in the whole scene when she's giving this heart-to-heart with Ward, you know, when he's going through all his, you know, drug problems or whatever, and the company's up and down, and they're about to get ousted from the company, and she's like, Ward, I just want you to know that I looked up to you. Like, you make the right decisions all the time. You know what to do. And you're like, he's not making the decisions. So that made that speech nothing. Like, it's his father that's still, it's their father that's still pulling the strings from behind the scenes.
Yeah.
So, like, you can't have this heartfelt, like, oh my god, you're this amazing person, because it means nothing to the audience knowing that that's not the case, and it means nothing to that character where he's like, oh shucks, like, thank you. No, because none of that lies on you. You're the face to that company. You're not the brains. You're not the one creating those decisions. It's your father dictating to you what he wants and what the hand wants at that point. Like that was a waste of time to me. There was no that did nothing to further advance the sibling relationship. That did nothing to give us a deeper insight into Joy's psyche or like Ward as a person. That to me was worthless. Like, that should not have been in the show.
I think the intent of that was just to show her, to show the audience that she valued her family over everybody else. So, I guess it was kind of foreshadowing that, you know, she could become bad, you know, just, even though you don't see her doing these, like, things like killing people or whatever, that she's still gonna, like, take her family's side over everything. So I guess that was just to show that, I guess, she valued her family over everybody. Even when they were going to trial, remember when Danny was trying to get back his name and his company? Uh-huh. It's like, at first, it's like, when Danny broke into that restaurant, actually, there was a lot of scenes that I'm thinking about it where it's like she valued her family over Danny.
Exactly, and I agree with that. That's why that scene didn't need to be there.
I don't know. I think part of it is just, you know, like, with these series and everything in general, it's like CW. They're always going to have, like, oh, you know, this, like, they think it's a sentimental thing or just to try to be emotional or whatever, but it's, you know, they have that on all these shows, so I mean, I guess it didn't really bother me that much.
I know, but that's, I think, also a problem of the seasons being too long with those shows. I think that's where it falls into.
I don't know. I don't really think that the series are too long. But I mean, I didn't feel like it dragged. Like, I think when I was watching Iron Fist, when I was watching Luke Cage and Jessica Jones, I did feel them start to drag after a while. Because in Jessica Jones's case, it was like, this guy, it's like, you can't defeat him, and it's like, when are they just going to kill this guy already? And it kind of dragged on. And in Luke Cage, it was similar a little bit with the, I forgot his name already, but
Copper, no, what was it?
It was the guy who he thought he was like Samuel L. Jackson from Pulp Fiction.
Not Copperhead. It's like another snake name though. But
Copperhead, Copper or something.
It was
Diamondback.
Diamondback.
Yeah. See, it's like when Diamondback came on the scene, I felt like the first guy was the better villain.
I agree.
You know, and but I mean, then again, I really do like all of these shows, you know.
I do too, and I think they all suffer from the same thing, in my opinion. And like, I love Jessica Jones to death. I have watched, you know, I started watching it again not that long ago, and that's my third or fourth time through it now. And I do think that I don't disagree that, you know, it starts to drag in the middle. I felt it a little bit less with Jessica Jones and Luke Cage, maybe just because I enjoyed them more. But I still noticed it, and I still think, like, even in those shows, like, there's a lot of wasted real estate. But I personally think that these are going to start to suffer from too many seasons. You do something like The Defenders, you have 13 episodes, too many episodes. You have something like The Defenders where you have 13 episodes, that would make sense to me because you have more characters to deal with. And especially all of the, it's not just the four main characters of The Defenders, but all like, the side characters that come along with that, the Colleen Wings and the, you know, Karen Pages and Foggy Nelsons and everything like that, or Misty Knight. And of course,
yeah, we need a Foggy spinoff series.
We do, but that, of course, The Defenders is the one where they decided to cut the season a little shorter and make that 8 episodes. And to me, that's like the exact opposite of what I want.
Yeah, I thought that was peculiar when I saw that. I was like, wouldn't that be longer? Wouldn't that be the one that you would maybe make like 15 episodes or something?
Yeah. Since I'm tearing into the show, I want to a few compliments.
Yeah, I was just gonna say we could say what we liked about it.
All right, I know, because and like I said, I'm sure I'm not doing a good job getting the point across by complaining, but things that I did like in episode 3 or 4, I forget what it was. Towards the
I liked the logo
when Colleen Wing was in the fight tournaments.
Yeah,
this is cheesy, but I got excited. I appreciate that they used the Run the Jewels song. I thought the soundtrack was pretty good for the most part of the series. Like, the soundtrack was excellent. Seemed to fit rather well. I enjoyed Colleen Wing a lot. I thought she was a great character. It was great to see Rosario Dawson again. It's funny because when she first showed up, part of me was excited, and then part of me is like, how the fuck are they going to do this? and then as it's going on, and I was like, this doesn't feel natural to me. And
what, the Rosario Dawson?
Yeah, like when she showed up and how she showed up. And
well,
you know she's going to be around, and like you know that's like she's the connecting one of the connecting threads besides the hand and besides them, you know, making Avengers references and everything. But like, after that initial,
well, they set her up in Luke Cage because she took that lesson,
yeah,
the karate lesson thing. So they brought it back.
No, and I remember them setting that up too, and like you know that's where it's gonna go, but it still felt like almost I don't want to say unnatural, but like it was sort of shoehorned. Like it's the only way it could have made sense for her to get in. And then afterwards, to me, she was fine. Like, she was perfect in the show, and it made complete sense. But, like, initially, her showing up, it was, like, the mix of excitement. And I'm like, are they going to be able to pull this off explaining it? You know, even though we have an idea, can they do it? And I think they did a fine job with that. I like Colleen Wing's reference. I think it was when she was in the Fight Club tournament, when they asked her what her name is, and she said Daughter of the Dragon. And I got really excited because I was like, oh, maybe this is foreshadowing too. I know it's probably just like a stupid Easter egg nod to fans, but like that makes me excited because Misty Knight was also part of Colleen Wing and Daughters of the Dragon. So I would like to see a Colleen Wing Misty Knight team up at some point in time on the Netflix series.
Maybe that'll be next. They'll do like a Heroes for Hire thing or something.
Fuck yes, I would be so into that. No, like those are a few things that I got a kick out of. It was like the little things that made me happy about the show. I don't know, I think the dude who like the guy who played Davos was awesome. Like
Indian washed him.
I look forward to seeing him in probably season two. I'm assuming he's not going to be in Defenders.
I don't know. I know, I think they said Elektra, and I think Colleen Wing's going to be in Defenders.
Colleen Wing's going to be in Defenders, I think Elektra, but I don't know about, like, the quote-unquote villains, I guess. Even though Elektra can fall on either side of that, but...
Yeah. Which, you know, a couple of things. One, because I'm thinking they could bring that Bucato guy or Bucato.
Bucato.
Because
who
when
was
she
only alive for three issues in the comics.
That's funny. And, like, well, Colleen killed him, but then didn't he, like, disappear after that?
Yes.
And so the hand took him away, so it's going to be the same thing like Elektra, where they're doing that creepy blood thing.
Yep.
And going to bring him back, and that's one thought I had. And the other thought was, I mentioned this before to you, like, I like that they had, like, the Danny goofiness that made me think of, like, you know, the current... Or it might have just ended. But the thing, it was like Power Man and Iron Fist.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. The one that's more cartoonish. You know what I'm talking about. The one where he's just like fiddle faddle.
Yep.
And they just like, he calls up Luke Cage. And then it's like, oh, tell Jessica I said hi. And he's like, she doesn't like me, does she? Like that. Like, I want to see that in like the Defenders.
I do too. That's what I'm wondering, how they're gonna create that without rushing it. Like, the end point by Defenders, we need to see those two as like BFFs, or as like the unlikely BFFs, you know, where it doesn't seem like they're the two that get along, but like it makes sense for those two to team up and start a Heroes for Hire by the end of it, you know. Yeah, no, I really want to see that happen. But they had some of the goofiness there. I think I enjoyed seeing that, like the whole J Money thing.
Yeah, that was, I was just gonna bring that up.
And I got chuckles out of that. I wish they had a little bit more in there, because Danny Rand's not always a funny character, but like when he's funny, he's really fucking funny in the books. To me, anyway, and. I think they could have, I think Rosario Dawson was a lot of the emotional sort of levity of the situation.
Yeah. She told everything. Colleen, she's like, why didn't you just join the wrist or the ear?
Yeah.
And I was like, that's pretty fun.
But maybe I was hoping to see a little bit more from Danny, I guess. I mean, that's not the show we got. It is what it is. So. But
yeah, I also heard, too, that like the script and stuff was rushed. Because I guess they were in a hurry to set up the Defenders. And...
Which is interesting, because Iron Fist was announced the same time as Jessica Jones and Luke Cage. So... Like, they could have worked on all three shows at the same time, essentially. And at least script-wise. So this show had so much time to figure itself out. It's weird to me if it really was rushed. That's bizarre, because, you know, just the timing of it, I guess. But, I mean, this falls into a different place than the other shows do, because Jessica Jones doesn't have to set up Defenders the same way that Iron Fist does. But at the same time, I didn't really feel like Iron Fist set up Defenders. Mm-hmm. Like, I see how it could lead into it, but I don't think it set the team up
yeah.
either. I thought, and now I'm going to say this because I kind of thought it was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And part of me wishes they had done this, like connect Luke Cage, Jessica Jones, and Daredevil better right at the end. But at the same time, it might have taken away from it being Danny Rand's series, an Iron Fist series altogether.
Yeah. Well, I guess, well, Luke Cage had the benefit of being introduced in Jessica Jones, because it was kind of like, he was kind of like the co-star on that show. You know? Like, he
for,
had a
for
big
a little role. While, yeah.
And so it's like, when Luke Cage came out, we were already familiar with him.
And I like that, and I kind of...
But they didn't do that with the Iron Fist.
No. And I remember during Luke Cage, I kind of hoped that Danny Rand would appear, but then it would, like... If he was around, they could do that and then just go back and tell the origin a little bit before leading up to this. So they could have done some like reverse engineering in that sense. But, like, I mean, we also didn't see Jessica Jones in Luke Cage. She was referenced here and there, but that was about it. But, yeah, Luke Cage got he had the benefit of having essentially his origin be told in Jessica Jones, and I think that was the right move for both those shows, or for both those characters at least. Like, Jessica Jones kind of needed someone like that at that time on the show, and the two characters work so well together. Obviously they're married, or maybe not anymore if you're reading the Jessica Jones solo series right now.
Yeah.
But yes, they those two characters work well together, but then again, so do Power Man and Iron Fist, so...
Yeah, it was tricky. They probably just decided, probably Jessica Jones, she's probably less known than Iron Fist, I would think, right?
I would say so, yes.
So maybe they used that as the, you know, they figured they'd combine Luke Cage with Jessica Jones because that's more of a name, and it would add some viewership. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, Iron Fist and Luke Cage are 70s characters, where Jessica Jones was created not even 20 years ago.
Yeah, so they're probably like, well, if we're gonna do more of a team-up thing, we might as well use Luke Cage on that.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since, like, Iron Fist, he had, like, the mini team-ups, too, because, like, he had the Davos thing, you know, that was coming back.
Yep.
And I was waiting for him to come back. It was interesting. Just another thing. Like, I was going to say, I think there's some good things that Netflix has been doing with the continuity, because they had Madame Gao there. And so her presence was felt throughout all of these shows. Although I don't know if she was on Jessica Jones or Luke
I don't
Cage.
Remember her being on either of those shows. But, I mean, I'm almost positive they referenced The Hand at the very least. So.
Yeah, and so it's like the whole Hand going on, and there's actually rumors that she might be the Crane mother.
Interesting.
You know, that's some people have had that theory, and it just makes me think of, like, even though he ends up being dead because, you know, in no one's universe but, like, Ra's or Ra's, even though he was dead by the end of the first movie, Batman Begins, you still felt his presence throughout all of the movies. You know, like this, you know, that especially the third one, you know.
Well, his daughter was in it, so yeah.
Yeah. But it's like, that's what I kind of feel with the Gao stuff, with all the, like, the drugs and the heroin and, you know, and the Hand. You know, maybe it's because there was two seasons of Daredevil 2. So it's like, in the very least, you did get, like, 3 out of 5 of the series that had her in it. And I just like the fact that they connected everything, and then they had the, was it the Silver Serpent? Who's Davos?
Yeah.
And they had his logo, which some of the stuff kind of throws you for a loop, too, because unlike certain series that will Guggenheim you, and, you know, they'll say that,
Steel Serpent,
that makes more sense than Silver. Steel's more intimidating than Silver.
It's funny, I should have had this in my mind, too, because I just I've been rereading the Fraction Brubaker Iron Fist run.
Yeah, I've been reading that, too, but I read the first one because it was free on Comixology, and then I just continue with on the Marvel Unlimited app, and it's just funny because they had the Steel Serpent logo on, like, their heroin stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'm, like, thinking, Davos has to be involved from all along. So I guess that's, like, we'll have to keep watching this stuff to find out more, because it's, like, they're using his logo, you know?
Yeah.
And, but apparently he wasn't bad from the get-go. Like, originally, he was just, like, trying to get Danny to come back. Because at first, I was like, this guy's gonna be bad. Because I know in the comics, he's bad. But it's, like, this whole thing where it's, like, he feels, like, neglected. But he's still willing.
Feels betrayed by him.
Yeah. So he's more sympathetic in this case. And he's still, like, willing to, like, okay, you're a douche and you left. But let's get you back there. But at the end, by the end of the season, he's like, no. No more. This, you know.
Because he wants to kill... Because he's pissed at Danny for not killing... Bucato or... whatever.
Bazooka Joe, as I call him.
Bazooka Joe. And... Bucato?
Bucato? Yeah.
Bucato.
That sounds right.
I forget. Oh, I'm terrible.
That's why I just called him Bazooka Joe, because I couldn't remember.
He's all been with Danny for not taking the kill or whatever, and taking hand down when he should have. Danny has a different idea of what he wants to do, and then it all comes down to, it's one of those things where, like, the fight you're having now isn't about that fight, it's about the fight from 12 years ago, you know, where someone, you know, stole your lunch money or something, you know. It's like one of those, it's not what it is now, and all these old feelings begin to surface, and sort of like this. He did feel neglected, and he was sort of resentful of Danny for leaving him, and, you know, because he's like, why did you leave me? We're best friends and all this shit. So it's interesting. I wanted to see them be bro-bros by the end again. That is not the way this went. But I mean, it sets up new villains for upcoming Iron Fist seasons.
Word. And I guess we also have to talk about, you know, the arrowness of the show, because there was a lot of similarities, you know, with they had the plane crash, and we found out that Harold Meacham was behind the plane crash. And, just like Malcolm Merlyn was behind the, boat crash.
Yeah, but the plane crash was part of, Danny's origin to begin with.
Yeah, that's true, but just the fact, just the similarities.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
And that could have been a reason why they didn't make him as... Well, I guess he's not as serious as a character sometimes. Well, I guess sometimes he's more serious, but I guess, you know, they wanted to differentiate them.
I think, I think I wanted to see more humor in Danny, and I think the show was lost because, like it had the humorous parts, but like I said earlier, like, I felt like there should have been more, but Danny was still very lighthearted. Like, he was serious, he was motivated, he was very focused, but there was, like, this lighthearted air about him as well.
Yeah.
See, I didn't completely hate it. I threw out some compliments. And like I said, I enjoyed it while watching, you know? It was an entertaining watch. Caroline started watching with me, and by the end of the first episode, she didn't want to watch the second one, but I ended up watching after that. And then after I was done with the series, she's like, because I asked her, I was like, you know, did you want to watch any at all? Because I just kind of flew through them as quickly as I could. She's like, I didn't really enjoy that first episode at all. So that's, you know, someone viewing with no attachment to the character previously from the comics or anything like that. And she enjoys the Netflix shows, you know, the Daredevil and Jessica Jones. I don't think she finished Luke Cage. I think she was enjoying it but didn't finish it. But, like, she likes the other shows, so. could be indicative of just how, like, the greater viewership sees it as well.
Yeah. Hmm.
I was prepared for it to be this giant shitfest, and it wasn't. Like, it definitely wasn't the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life. And again, I ranked it last out of all the Marvel Netflix shows, but it wasn't as bad as people were making it out to be. Like, you hear these horror story reviews, and I understand the gripes that people have with the show, why they might not like it, but I don't, you know, like, plot lines or this and that here and there. But I think there was enough enjoyable about the show to not make it a complete wash. I think there were, for as many unlikable characters and characters I really just didn't care about on the show, there were characters that I was invested in and very much engaged in their lives and want to see backstories and stuff like that. I want to see more Davos. I want to see more Bakudo and more Colleen Wing and whatnot. So even the dude who, when Danny broke the guy's leg, the one who I mentioned earlier, who had saved them from the attack in the dojo or whatever it was, and where Danny met up with him at the hand compound. Mm-hmm. That dude, when him and Danny squared off in a later episode, or maybe it's the end of that episode, or maybe the next one, I forget. But and Bakudo's like, this right here is the future of the hand. Like, someone saved this man, you know?
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Fix him up. So I want to see what happens with him. Maybe we see him, you know, a couple seasons from now.
Well, you know what my biggest, or probably my only complaint about the show is?
What?
He wasn't in the goddamn costume. It's funny because... Sorry.
Kind of almost got it during one of the I think it was during the Kunlun, one of the Kunlun flashbacks or whatever.
Maybe. Yeah, I was happy when I saw that. I was kind of like I lit up during that. I was like, that's pretty cool.
I did too. I was pretty stoked at that. I was like, I figured that's the closest to the costume we're gonna get.
I kind of had that feeling when we saw it that might be it.
And I was cool with it, but
it's kind of like in like Jessica Jones where it's like, can you believe this old outfit I used to wear? And you don't ever see her wear the jewel outfit.
Thank God.
Yeah, it would have been pretty bad. But I think with the Iron Fist, like, obviously that outfit, that jewel outfit, that would not have worked at all, you know, in that series with the tone of it and everything.
Well, especially because that was in the comics. It's, you know, when she was part of the Avengers or whatever.
But you could have definitely made the Iron Fist suit work. Because, I mean, look at if you couldn't have the guy with the Daredevil with the devil helmet on, you could have made the Iron Mask work.
This is true, but I'm glad they didn't do it because I feel like it would have fell into the Daredevil trap where the whole season you're just like, oh, is he going to do? And then they give it to you with the last 5 minutes, where I never really got the feeling of, is he going to put the suit on? It was less about that with Iron Fist to me than Daredevil was. Because the whole time during season one, and maybe it's because the Netflix series were new, it's the first one, we haven't seen any yet, and we know Daredevil, like, it's a very iconic suit. So the whole time, you know, he's fighting and he's just like black t-shirt get up and everything. So, but the whole show turned into be, you know, for a lot of people, for me, it's like, it was exciting. It was a great show, but like, oh, when's he going to put the suit on? So I'm kind of glad that it didn't fall into that trap. Cause I but never then, got see, the that's vibe the thing. That was like the end goal for that character.
Well, I think the thing though, just the fact that he was wearing the black suit in the beginning, or he was just wearing like the do-rag on his head. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's all you had to do with Iron Fist. Just give him a green do-rag, you know?
Yeah, I was kind of into the fact that he I still definitely want to see him in his suit at some point in time. Maybe by the end of Defenders we'll get it, because it's a badass costume. But I kind of enjoyed the fact that he was out in the open about who it was. You know, it's like, I mean, he's not public saying like, hey, I'm Iron Fist, everyone, as I run this company, this multi-billion dollar corporation. But he wasn't hiding his abilities either.
Yeah, because he told everybody. It was just like home, like when Homer was like in the, where's the pink shirt at work, and they put him in the mental hospital. And he's like, I told you, I'm not insane. You know, that's what Danny was doing. I was like, I told you, my plane crashed, and then I was raised in Kunlun, and I'm the Iron Fist. And he rambles about Xiao Lao the Undying, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, just nobody was believing him. They just thought he was cuckoo. But I guess Marvel is less about the identities.
Dude, I was also pissed that they took Big Al away in the first episode. Oh, was that his name? Big Al? Something Al?
The heroin guy?
Yeah. I was sad when he died. I felt more for that character than I felt for almost any other character on that fucking show, to be honest with you. And that was in the first episode.
Yeah. I mean, they did get a little bit into the, like, with the drug abuse and... Mm-hmm. You know, and then they had the other issue too of like, you know, the hand, like one, like both sides, you know, it's like there were different sects of the hand.
There are different factions of the hand, yeah. And that's really interesting because you can have a series just about that alone, like without any of the heroes involved. You can have a hand series, you know, not that they would do that. I don't know who'd watch that, but,
so it's like neither good, neither one is good.
No, and I'm glad that Colleen saw enough. You know, she had her faith in the hand, like it was her family. It was with her when a lot of, you know, in a time when she needed it the most. And then it took Danny and, like, Rosario, I can't, Claire.
Broclario Dawson.
Broclario Dawson to help Colleen see that that wasn't the right choice, so... Because they ended up turning on her, and she, like, she still had faith in them up until they turned on her too. So they kidnapped her and beat her up.
Yeah, that was pretty crazy.
Yeah. I don't like the whole thing with what you want to know something that pissed me off too.
I do.
And I felt like... Maybe you can explain this, because maybe I missed something. But Danny gets fired from the company while he is on a flight to China. And he's using a Rand Corporation plane. Mm-hmm. Like, that is a plane owned by the company. You think that he would find out that he was fired before he makes it back to America... Because he, you know, has that property. He has the company's property.
Yeah, there were some nitpicks I saw. Like, I saw somebody say something about, like... He's like, oh, he broke, like, Claire's phone or something. Because, like, they could track us.
Yeah.
And he's like, that's why I gave away my phone. But then the next scene... He had the phone again or something.
Yeah, there were a lot of continuity goofs.
Yeah, I mean, I don't... I don't think that's much of a, like, of a big hole or whatever. You know,
That's kind of lazy writing, though, I think.
I will say this. It's no, like, having your father say that you should do everything to prevent yourself from being a hero, and then in the next movie, talk to your girlfriend about how... Me being Superman was the dream of a farmer from Kansas, when it's completely the opposite of the last movie. Yeah. Like, that's a really big, like, I can't even believe that would get through, you know?
No, I mean, but that's a character flaw. That's like a... I mean, yes, that's different, because they're trying to retcon something huge and acknowledge... or not acknowledge something from the first movie. But it's different than the cell phone. Like, to me, I understand that slips like that will happen. Maybe they film a scene out of order. But I feel like you have enough producers on the show to notice those things, too. Hmm.
Well, I don't know. Maybe just the fact that he was so wrapped up in his own kung fu world that he wasn't really paying attention to the other stuff. Because the business side was never really this important thing for him.
No, but that's that was another issue for me. It wasn't a big thing for him. Like, but he put up such a fight to make it a huge thing for him, and then when he got it, it turned into nothing for him, and they almost, like, abandoned the storyline completely until, and then he got fired, and then he got rehired again, and it affected him in no way whatsoever. There were no repercussions to him, other than the fact that Joy sees him walking on the streets, like, hey, you're an asshole. You ruined everything, and he's like, bro, what are you talking about? And, like, to me, it was just a weird... Like, it was the storyline that was happening to other people, even though it directly affects him. Whether he cares about it or not, it's still his company. And he had no idea he got fired and rehired. Like, it's this weird...
I was confused as to how he could have been fired in the first place. Because if he's, like, the majority stakeholder...
I was looking into that. I tried doing research on this, because I was like, this is fucking stupid.
This is how we find out stuff about... In the real world,
I couldn't find anything about firing like a majority shareholder. I couldn't find anything unless you're going to buy out his stocks, and they didn't mention anything about that. They just said they were firing him. But if you're a shareholder, you're a member of the board. That's the way corporations work. So technically, if I put in $10 of stock into Nike, guess what? I could still show up to their fucking share meetings. Like that's how things go. But, like, that's not, you know... But, you know what I'm saying? So, it's like... I didn't... It annoyed me that they fired him, because I'm like, I don't think you can do that. And I looked this up, and I couldn't find anything to say one way or the other, but I couldn't... I'm pretty sure you can. And then they rehired him, and I'm like, you rehired someone you didn't have the power to fire, maybe? So, that whole thing just seemed weird. Like, I don't...
So, we both had that thought.
Yeah, that annoyed the hell out of me. So,
well, I guess there was some goofs.
Also, I mentioned this to you, and here we are on Rob's little nitpicks, but it wouldn't be an episode of the show if I didn't point out something stupid. People found parking way too fucking easily in here. That does not happen. That is not a thing that happens. You do not pull up in front of an urgent care center and park there. Any parking, like, right now. No. No.
Wrong. When you, going back to the whole goofiness aspect, just like when he was talking to Joy at her, I guess it was his house, right? And, no, it was her house.
It's his house that turned into her house, but it was really his house.
But what was, wait. He was in some loft. Wait, no.
Oh, the loft that they put that.
That was his loft.
That was his loft.
That group, the Chinese group, from the restaurant.
No, J Dog, J Money put him up there.
Oh, that's what that was.
That was part of the whole thing. Like, if you're going to sue them, well, we have a place to put you up. This is where we put our clients up.
Yeah, but that part, when you were talking about the fighting and how the, you know, how it was not structured, well, that came to mind, because it just, like, it just looked like they were on the elevator and he was just, like, backing into people and stuff, and yeah. There was one guy that just, like, came up with a hatchet, that kind of made me laugh, because that was just, like, so, like, cartoony.
Well, it's funny, too, because the way that, they're in the elevator and he's trying to save Joy, and Joy's in the elevator, too. And you see the scene where he's beating most of the people up, but there's the one guy on her. And I'm sorry, but if it's like a member of the Hand, Joy's not... I don't... Unless she is trained that we don't know about, which they didn't allude to anyway whatsoever. Like, she didn't seem capable of fighting. They didn't give us any hints. Like, she started, like, punching the dude in the face and maybe, like, kicked him. And I'm like, I don't... Because I don't even know if Danny hit that person. Like, and I get she's going to fight for her life, and you're gonna... But, like, it seemed like... The way she fought, or threw a punch, almost seemed like there was training involved.
Yeah, I don't know. But, And I definitely do think, like, the first scene of the movie was just, like, so choreographed. With the, him just going there, and they're like, we can't let you up, and then all of a sudden he starts doing the kung fu or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just looked so, like, planned out.
It did. It was very by the numbers.
It was just, well...
Some of the fights, it just didn't feel natural, some of the fight scenes.
I thought it was interesting, though, with, like, was it the bride of 1,000,000 spiders or whatever? Did you notice she was there? Am I getting the name wrong?
In which...
You know that thing where he had, like, Gao tricked him? Because she's like, oh, I'm gonna... He wanted to release that Russian guy's daughter.
When he goes and beats up the two dudes in the hand, he's doing, like, this whole gauntlet. Yeah.
Yeah. And he gets up to the one and, like... I just remember her from the Brubaker stuff.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, they put her in there. It's pretty interesting.
That scene seemed awfully weird to me, because he's all, like, fucked up on her, like, poison... And he still ended up beating her somehow, and I didn't. Maybe I was, like, only half paying attention. But I felt like I missed something watching, because I was like, how did he pull this off? I don't get it.
I don't know. I think maybe it had something to do with him, like, focusing or something, or chi or some nonsense, or I don't know. I don't know what he did.
You think that, like, it was kind of cool that there were abilities that the Iron Fist has that he didn't even know about, but do you think that he would know about healing? Think they would have told him about that before?
Well, I think they said that he, like, never finished his training. Like, he just kind of, like, preemptively left there.
Yes, but I feel like healing's something that's going to come up in 15 years, like, if there's an Iron Fist thing. like, someone will get healed by... You know, I feel like that's... That's one of the big things that don't get overlooked.
Mm.
Maybe. I don't know. But, I dig the... What I was into was the scene where they were showing the footage from the 40s, or World War II era, or whatever the fuck it was. And he's like, oh, there was an Iron Fist before you. And then made me think that it was,
Orson Randall.
Orson Randall, yeah.
Or, you know, I did have this thought... Like, why, you know, they died on the plane crash. Who's to say that, his father wasn't involved somehow?
Yeah, which would be more along the lines of the real origin, I guess.
Though I don't think that was his father fighting in that footage. I think that was Orson Randall.
I think it was Orson Randall, too, and I kind of hope it's Orson Randall. I would like to see some background of that.
Yeah. That would be pretty cool.
It would be. So, yeah. I mean, I enjoyed it. It wasn't my favorite. I do want to watch it again. Maybe I'll pull some more things I like out of it. I was hoping to enjoy it, but expecting like a hot pile of garbage from everything I was hearing. And, you know, it definitely was not that...
A lot of the reviews, I was just like, oh, I know what this is about. I know why the negativity. So I didn't pay attention. And I just figured I'll just, like, you know, make up my own mind, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the reviews didn't have any effect on me, so... But, yeah, I don't know.
Shall we move on to Arrow?
Yeah. So, Arrow, I don't know what the point of this episode was.
It was, you know what it was? There are too many episodes this season. That's the point. It was, nothing happened. It was 15% Oliver getting the shit kicked out of him by Prometheus and 85% torture porn. Or, I'm sorry, 80, I reversed that. Jesus Christ. Yeah. It's 15% torture porn of Arrow getting the shit kicked out of him by Prometheus, an 85% flashback of Russian flashback.
It actually, which
I'm not invested in that storyline at all. So like when they do those flashbacks at this point, I'm just kind of not into it.
Yeah, the flashbacks have lost their impact since maybe. I haven't cared about them really since like he left Japan.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that.
So, yeah, I was gonna say the whole like storyline was just and I don't like the flashbacks anymore. But I was just like, you know, this makes me yearn from the flashback parts. You know, during watching it. It was just stupid.
Because of how... and just the entire... almost the entire episode was flashback. It was so much flashback.
I mean, I'm not of the mindset that... well, it's too long of a season. Because I think if there were better writers, it wouldn't matter how many episodes there were. It's just that they don't know what to do anymore.
Yeah, I think the only reason, or one of the reasons I think it's too long of a season is just because you start to be conditioned otherwise from other shows that run shorter seasons. Or even like on the CW, when you have something like iZombie that does 13 to 16 episodes a season. And I think that's perfect for that show. I've never felt iZombie runs too long. And it's a different show. It's not superhero apes like Arrow and Supergirl or anything, but, Flash, but I think these types of shows suffer from that because I'm used to something else now, so maybe I notice it a bit more. But at the same time, this episode didn't do anything. We got Prometheus broke Oliver, and he's like, I like killing. I enjoy it.
But and when so, was that ever a thing?
Never.
When was it ever like... I never got that impression throughout the 5 years that he is a green Dexter, a green Punisher.
We spent 5 years of him fighting with the fact that he didn't want to kill, that he felt he had to kill.
Yeah, that was the whole essence of it.
They erased 5 seasons of this character's development in one scene.
Next, they're going to tell us that Green Arrow was the dream of a farm boy from Kansas.
it just didn't make sense. And I mean, it seems like next episode shit's going to hit the fan and maybe get a little bit better. But I don't like there was no point to this. You kidnapped the mayor for 3 days. The mayor's beat to shit. Like, people are going to notice if the mayor's missing. It didn't seem like that was anything to do. They didn't show the team until the end. And they're like, they had to tell us how long he's been missing for. Because we didn't get that from this episode at all. And Diggle's like, well, he's been gone for 3 days. What are we going to... oh, look at that. Ollie, are you okay? As he stumbles into the...
They said he was gone for 6 days. What a shitty team.
No, 3 days.
Or 3 days?
3 days, yeah.
His team sucks, man.
I know, and then Felicity's like, I can't get a read on this. And, like, dude, you work for fucking hackers. Like,
and they're going to end up being bad, too. You know,
they are bad. So. You 100% know they're bad.
Just the fact that they're hacking into shit.
I'm not looking forward to the storyline where Felicity gets pinned in the middle of Arrow versus Team Hacker. So, like, I feel like that's going to happen by the end of the season.
Did you see that that art concept work for her on like Legends where she's like Huntress or in a Huntress-esque suit?
No. I have not.
So I'm wondering what's going to happen with that.
Hopefully nothing. I don't know. This was a very unenjoyable episode. After, I think, like, you and I have been talking this season up, at least compared to season 4, you know, there's definitely been an improvement. But then they still throw shit out like this.
Yeah, it's still a lot better than the last season, but I don't know. I think just what bothers me is I keep saying this probably once a day, but I really don't think that their initial intention was to have Adrian Chase's Prometheus. I think they just want the audience to think that they were witty and they had that switch or whatever. But yeah. I think he was originally going to be Vigilante, and then everybody's like, haha, I know who that is, you know? I don't think they're smart enough to have planned that from the beginning, and that's what's bothering me.
I don't think so either. Look at how they got rid of Ragman. That was the laziest fucking writing the character off a show.
Yeah, even if you made Ragman Prometheus, that would have been better.
Yeah. I don't...
Even though it wouldn't have made sense, but...
Am I happy Adrian Chase is Prometheus? I don't really care. I don't give a shit. But prove to me why this needed to happen. Tell me why... Like, this had to be written this way, and they're not doing that, and it just feels awkward to me.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, and I don't know why he let him go. Because if I'm Oliver and you let me go, now I'm gonna kill you. But he just decides, oh, I'm done.
Oliver's conflicted, and Adrian has the upper hand still, because he knows Oliver's secrets. He still knows, like... He's still working for giving the appearance that he's working for the team of the good guy. I think it's stupid. I'm trying to find logic in it, and I don't want to defend it.
Because what was that, like the 16th episode?
Stupid. I don't know. That means 9 more. 7 more. So, I don't
know. But I guess Ivan Drago's coming back.
Yeah.
Because Merlin saved him.
I don't know. I feel like this is the same time every season where it's usually right around this time where I feel like nothing feels like it's moving. It doesn't feel like it's moving forward, that they're just adding more shit in. I don't know. I didn't enjoy this week, so I'm looking forward to next week at least. Oh, side note, because not about Arrow, but Powerless hasn't recorded the past couple weeks on my DVR. Is that on break? Did they cancel the show?
I don't know. I don't think it's canceled.
I don't know.
Is powerlesscanceled.com? I mean, I don't see why. It's still better than their other NBC shows.
No, I enjoy Perilous. So, I don't know. I know they have another comedy that they're showing on Thursday nights now about a dude who committed murder, and they're trying to make it like a comedy.
Oh, Harry and the Hendersons?
Yes, Harry and the Hendersons.
They made him like Larry Henderson. It's so stupid.
Yeah.
It's, what's his name, John Lithgow's in it.
John Lithgow, thank you.
It could be good, because he's in it, but...
It looks, like, amusing, but it's a weird concept for a television show. I feel like that probably came about because NBC's like, well, Fox signed on, greenlit a show for O.J. Simpson, so what could we do regarding murder?
Oh, which one are you talking about?
Oh, I didn't do it, but if I did, here's how, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, you're talking about that special they were going to do.
Yeah.
I've been making jokes about that ever since the book. If I did it, here's how it happens.
Horrible. But, I don't know. Yeah. Do you have anything else to say about Arrow? Because I don't.
Well, this made me think of a couple of things since... Chappelle is back on Netflix, and he tells on the first episode, I think, or first series, it was called like The Artist Spin or something like that, and he was talking about like the 4 times he met O.J. Simpson, and he said that the first time he met him, because he was talking about, he's like, I can't get enough of the O.J. show, so I'm guessing he's talking about that FX show with like John Travolta and Cuba Gooding Jr. And I still haven't seen that. A lot of people like that one. But
Shall we move on to the Justice League trailer?
Yep. Justin League trailer. Justin League. Justice League. Basically, DC's been like having these teasers all week with all the members except Superman and Green Lantern, who should be a part of it, but for some reason isn't. And so they got like five spaces, so they've been doing these teasers since like Thursday, and it ended Friday. And then they made a trailer on Saturday, and I thought it was pretty entertaining. I mean, there were some aspects that, you know, I question. You know, whenever it's a DC movie, I'm like, this could look cool, but who knows what's going to happen.
I mean, the trailer didn't get me excited for the movie at all. It didn't turn me off from it.
I'm trying to accept it for what it is, you know.
The fight scenes looked awfully Snydery, which I was hoping would change. Like, I understand that's him as a director, but I wish that it had a different tone, considering that, like, you know, you made a couple movies that people aren't happy with. Maybe you want to at least try to switch it up rather than do more of yourself. Maybe that is the case. I told you this yesterday. Or whenever, yesterday when I watched it, I don't know why a blue sky just can't fucking look blue in the DC universe. Like, well, everything has to be so fucking dark all the time, and it's just like, it's to a point where it's just beating me down, like, my senses, and you just feel sad watching this shit because all the colors are just so non-existent.
Yeah, Zack Snyder is definitely a fan of the muted color palette. I will say this though, I think part of it is probably the main drawing power for me. I mean, I think a lot of the reason, like, a lot of the stuff is so dark is because Batman. And, you know, him always fighting at night. So I think that is a big aspect for it.
I guess, but it doesn't look like there's one enjoyable day in the DC universe. It just looks like every day is miserable.
It is. But, I don't know. That, I mean, that could be part of it. Could be like they're going to Apocalypse or whatever. I mean, there was a lot of parademons in the trailer, so I don't know where they are.
Parademons look cool.
Yeah. My guess is that a lot of it is taking place on Apocalypse, you know. Just like when they're at the... when there's a part in the trailer where it's like Wonder Woman's in the middle, and then it's like Aquaman's twirling his trident, and then Cyborg's on the other side. That looks like it's like this, you know, the tower or something, like Apocalypse. Mm-hmm. You know, that didn't look like very like earthy kind of architecture. And
yeah, I get what you're saying. Although, who the hell knows, because nothing looks earthy in DC EU Earth anyway. So.
That's true. I mean, I don't know. I mean, there are some elements of it. I know people are saying, things are try hard or whatever. Like, I mean, I was listening to the Batman on Film. They did a podcast, like, immediately after it aired yesterday. And they're just talking about, like, the jokes were try hard. And I didn't get that feeling. The only little thing I thought was kind of peculiar was when Aquaman is on the Batmobile at the end, and he's just like, yeah. Like, I thought that was kind of odd.
I remember when they showed, like, the teaser at San Diego last year, and I remember commenting on here about how I enjoyed the fact that it seems like DC's lightening up little bit. It seemed like quippy, and then when I watched this trailer, I was expecting like the little bits of quip, and they were there, and they did nothing for me. And I was like, I don't like even the lighthearted moments. Like, I don't know. I'm hoping. I don't know if it was the mood I watched the trailer in yesterday or not. But it didn't. I'm glad that those are there, but it didn't do anything for me, I guess. But it's a trailer. Hopefully the next one or two trailers, do better. I don't know. It seemed cool, the focus on Wonder Woman and Batman. Well, less Batman, because he's fucking everywhere. And I love Batman, but Wonder Woman. But I think I don't know. I'm gonna go against the grain here, and I think Wonder Woman aside, I think the Flash I'm probably most excited for. I'm really interested how they're gonna do this take on the Flash. So I know everyone online is up in arms about this Flash, but like I kind of dig Ezra Miller, so I would like to. I hope this works out. So.
Yeah, I mean, I do hope so too. I mean, I hope it is a good representation, but I don't know. I still, there's just like little things, like I guess he doesn't really look like Barry Allen. I mean, neither does Grant Gustin, but you know, I mean, from what it looks like, he doesn't look like he's going to be a forensic. What is the word for it? Detective, forensic, something or other.
I don't need the characters to look like how they look in the comics. Like, I don't need them to even be the same at this point. But, like, give me something. Give me a part of their personality that's the same that I can, like, latch onto. Because if you want to create someone new, just create a new character. But I feel like there's so many other things that I could get bent with DC about. Like, I feel like I'm going to let this one go and hope for the best with it. But
I mean, another thing is the lightning did look cool, but it seems like it's the wrong color lightning. Like, it should be yellow.
Yeah, that's probably because the sky is fucking putrid gray at all times and discolors the lightning.
But even when even in that thing where he's in his like little like lair or whatever with, you know, and Bruce Wayne finds him and he throws the batarang at him.
Yeah.
It's like the lightning is still blue there.
It is.
So it's just like I feel like Snyder's just getting things wrong again.
Yeah.
But I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I really like the look of Aquaman.
I liked it more in the pictures. Like, I remember when they first showed us what Aquaman was going to look like, and I was like, why change it? And then after a while, I was kind of used to it, and I was like, this looks kind of cool. I like that they're doing something a little bit different. But then, it like, the pictures were fine. You know, I was like, okay, this looks badass. It didn't sell me in these clips. I don't think it looks horrible or anything like that, but it didn't sell me on the look completely, because they said it was the way Snyder kept selling it or whoever were like, these changes are there. It's deliberate and it's an aesthetic reason that you'll see in motion. Like, it makes sense. And I didn't get that from, thinking about that. Like, it didn't make sense to me. Maybe I have to see more of the action scenes or more Aquaman-centric scenes to understand that a little bit better.
Yeah, I mean, I think what a smart thing that WBDC is doing is I don't think they're giving away too much, you know, because they didn't show Superman. I mean, I know we know that he's coming back, but they didn't. It seems like they're learning from last time.
You can't give that away. You absolutely cannot give that away.
I mean, we all know what's happening, but
yeah,
I mean, they showed,
can't give it away.
They showed Lois Lane looking up at something in the sky, you know, which could be a hint of something.
True, but they probably shouldn't have even done that.
Yeah. But it does kind of create the intrigue, like, oh, what's she doing there? If he's dead, you know, but even though we really know he's dead.
Yeah.
But, what was I going to say? But, the beginning of the trailer, as everybody is pointing out, it looked like Batman Begins at the very beginning.
Kind of, yeah.
Just, like, looking at, like, the whole, like, the landscape of, you know, just, like, the panning of, like, the outdoors, and he's on a horse, and, you know, it's like he's making this trek. Although somebody did make a point, like, I forgot where I read this, but it's like, why is he on a horse? Why didn't he, like, just, like, you know, he's a millionaire. Or a billionaire or whatever. So it's like, why would he be riding a horse? He could just, like, take a private plane there.
That's true. Hopefully they explain it.
Yeah. And just some other things. See, like, Silas Stone in the apartment with the mother box, and then the parademon appears. So it looks like he's probably going to be kidnapped.
Interesting. Yeah. I'm glad they didn't give away too much. I wish they gave away a little bit, just a tad bit more. Because maybe that's what it was. Because like I said, the trailer didn't do much for me. Maybe a second trailer will kind of get me engaged with it. My ultimate goal was to not be turned off by this trailer, because I'm generally not a super huge fan of the DC trailers. And this one didn't completely turn me off, so I will chalk that up as a win. I suppose so.
So they're doing their job. Trying to think what else with the trailer. The one thing that stuck out too was, like, it looks like there's this full blown like Amazon war.
They
show for like 1 second.
I wonder if that's actually part of the movie, or if that's maybe something that happens in Wonder Woman that they're referring to, or...
Because, I mean, it did look like the Amazons were fighting, like, the apocalypse, like...
Okay.
...peoples. And another thing, it's like, I didn't know this, but... Because apparently people have said this has been confirmed, that Darkseid is gonna be in it. Like, he's not the main villain, Steppenwolf... But I didn't even know that it was announced that that Darkseid was going to be in it.
Now, and I'm sorry, but if Steppenwolf's involved, I'd rather just see Darkseid.
Well, I mean, they probably want to try to do a thing where they're setting it up for some other thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know what else in the trailer. They had Mera there.
Yes, that's awesome.
Underwater. And then I noticed Billy Crudup in the prison with Barold.
I don't recall that.
It's one of those scenes, like, you know, on The Flash where he's going to visit his dad in the prison.
I watched the trailer once and I think some of it just didn't stick with me.
Yeah, I have no life, so I watched it a lot. But yes, and I guess another thing to comment on is you had the, what's his face, J.K. Simmons as Gordon at the end.
Yeah.
Which at first I was like, what? I thought he said just like a bat, but I guess Aquaman says dressed like a bat. I dig it. And so, because at first I was confused, I was like, what is he talking about?
Wonder if we're going to hear complaints about not being able to understand him, so they did the same thing with him that they did to Bane. And make his voice like 14 times louder than everyone else's in the movie.
Yeah, I mean... And I just thought it was funny, because it's like, oh, you're playing well with others again. And he's like, it might be temporary. And I was like... Like, going back to the Batman on Film podcast, they said that... I guess they're pretty critical of the whole thing, so they were saying... it's that line was just, like, Batman just, like... rolling his eyes at the DC universe. Which, you know, because they're skeptical of the whole thing, you know. Since BVS and everything, and... You know, I am too, but I'm... But I'm also of the mindset of, like, it can't get worse than that.
I hope that's true.
Because there's probably going to be too much going on where it's like you won't be able to focus on the bad aspect. You know, that's what I'm hoping for. Whereas BVS, I know it sounds like I just, like, insulted all the time. I mean, I didn't, what do you call it? I didn't hate it, but I didn't like it either. There was aspects of it that I did like, but they're pretty much the Batman aspects. You know.
Yeah, I don't ever need to see that movie again.
Which, just another part to throw in, just seeing the whole part where it's like Batman's, Bruce Wayne's on the horse and everything, it's like you just got the feeling, you can't escape it, that this feels like a Batman movie again.
I don't want a Batman movie, though.
I do.
I want a Justice League movie.
It did look pretty awesome when he, like, just kind of, like, slid across the sky and he threw the thing at the parademon.
Yeah.
I was like, that, the suit looked awesome in that part.
Yeah. Hopefully, I mean, I don't know. I think how I view Justice League will be determined by how much I like Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Or let me rephrase this. If I go and see Justice League, it will be determined by how much I enjoy Wonder Woman.
I thought you had to see it because it has J.K. Simmons.
I'll watch it somehow. I'll find like a fan edit where it's only J.K. Simmons's scenes.
That'd be funny.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm sure we'll see a second trailer probably around Comic-Con.
Yeah, just... I give them applause just for not showing Superman. I mean, they showed restraint, which I thought... That's hard to do considering this is a first Justice League movie. To not show Superman in the trailer.
True, and like, trailers used to not give as much away as... In the past couple of years, there's been this weird change in the way that people edit trailers together. Mm-hmm. And now they, for the past, like, 5-10 years, they've been giving so much away. So it's nice to see a trailer that gives a little less away, I suppose. But
yeah. It was just funny, too, because when they were doing the teasers... They did one for all the members, and somebody made, like, a fake one of Superman. It was just the coffin with the dirt on it.
Yeah.
And it had, like, the movie noise and effects. It was just funny because you could clearly hear, like, the Batmobile noise in in one of the segments. And then it just ends, but instead of, like, it showing, like, all of them on, like, the, Flying Fox or whatever vehicle they're in or something. It just shows it's like levitating and it just shows you the casket again.
I just wish Green Lantern was a part of this, but otherwise... Yeah.
I mean, there's rumors that a Green Lantern might appear in it.
I'd be fine with that.
I mean, there was actually like rumors that like Armie Hammer could be a Green Lantern.
I would like to see a Green Lantern in this movie.
Yeah, that would be cool. Or a Martian Manhunter. Yeah, I think it's more realistic to see a Green Lantern. Or at least, like, a hint towards one. Like have them just, like, see a ring or something, or I don't know.
Yeah.
Or I don't know how they would do that. But, I mean, they're clever. Well, I don't know how clever they are. But, I mean, they could think of something. Just have like a Bruce look on a flash drive a clip of like, you know, like the Abrenseer like plane crashing and handing it off to Hal Jordan the ring. I actually did hear like I know this is kind of interrelated, but I heard that like the Batman movie is getting a new producer too, and also there were Spider-Man posters.
Yes, they looked fun.
Yeah.
With bright blue skies.
Yeah.
I can't wait for that movie.
Yeah, Marvel's like, we will not be outdone by this DC nonsense. We have to Yeah, and I liked how they had the Avengers building in all the pictures.
I was just about to bring that up. I enjoyed that.
Because they're like, this isn't your typical Sony horseshit Spider-Man. This is the real Marvel Universe Spider-Man.
That's why Iron Man is probably going to be in it for like half the movie. I hope he's in it for... I mean, I hope he's not in it too much, but I mean, Robert Downey Jr. is always awesome. So.
Yeah, I wouldn't care if that was the case, you know, but... and it's funny, too, because I heard that, like, I guess on Twitter, the fans asked James Gunn, they're like, oh, what do you think of the Justice League trailer? And he's like, oh, I saw it a long time ago. He's like, I really liked it. Because apparently he's, like, friends with, like, Zack Snyder.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So...
They're all boys, so...
Yeah.
Plus, these directors don't want to shit on each other. Like,
they're not...
You're not competing with a director. You're trying to make a good movie that makes a lot of money. You know, it's not... Really, your competition is almost the other movies that are out the same week that yours comes out. It's not... Like, fans turn it into DC versus Marvel. And we talk about it in DC versus Marvel, but it doesn't... I'm sure none of the actors or creators or think of it or care to think of it that way. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is just silliness. Because it's like, you know, people will be like, oh, DC's... They're for adults. It's like, what are you talking about? Look at all those Marvel things we were just talking about. Each season has this, like, gratuitous blood scene where they're just, like, pummeling the shit out of someone and it's just, like, blood. And it's like, you want to tell me that those characters are, like, lighthearted, you know?
Tell me that Daredevil getting shot in the head in the first episode of season two is...
Yeah, Punisher just shoots him in the head. The episodes I was watching the first season the other day, it's like he just like this Russian mob guy and he has him on the roof and he just fucking throws him off the roof.
Yeah, yeah.
And Claire's like, is he dead? And he's just like, he'll live. It's just like, what? Both comic publishers, they have like lighter tone characters and then they have like darker ones, you know? Like Superman is like, he should be like a lighthearted character.
Yeah, but the thing is DC decides to turn, or Warner Brothers decides to turn the lighter hearted characters into darker tone characters.
Yeah. Which was interesting with the Justice League trailer, because before I was thinking like, oh... Aquaman is going to be this gruff, like, Rob Zombie, like, talking in a deep voice the whole time. But it seems like he's more of a surfer guy, you know?
Kinda.
Or he seemed, like, more, like, lighthearted, so it was just like, it'll be interesting to see how it's, you know, it goes with that.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, like, Spider-Man, I would say he's, like, a lighter character, you know, than, like, Daredevil would be a darker character. I mean, Captain America, I guess that would be more, he's, I don't know how you would describe that.
I'd say he's a lighthearted character unless you read Brubaker's run.
Yeah, that's a good assessment, you know. Like, he's America, so it should be, like, lighthearted or whatever. But, I don't know. And then you got, like, Squirrel Girl and Howard the Duck and all that shit, and it's just, like...
That's like, why I love Marvel so much. Like, they have those goofy characters.
Yeah.
Like in the Spider-Woman book I was talking about earlier, like, there's so much humor in it. And it's not bogged down by humor where it's too funny or too quippy, you know? But it's nice to read those books because sometimes you read stuff, and not just DC, but because Marvel sometimes can be a little serious too, but DC more so, I think. But other publishers, like, you read these just superhero books and they're not even fun to read sometimes. All right, well, that does it for this episode of Comics Reviews. Thanks to everyone once again for tuning in, like always, and we appreciate very much. If you don't mind giving us a little subscribe action on iTunes or SoundCloud, or not SoundCloud. We're not on SoundCloud. What the fuck are we on? Stitcher. Why am I Stitcher? I can never get this right. iTunes or Stitcher or Podomatic or TuneIn, or there's something else we might be on. Maybe, I don't know. We're out there. Google us and give us a little like-see on Facebook. That'd be cool. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Comics Reviews. You could find us all there. We have a website, comicsreviews.com. You could follow me individually, personally, at Call This Rational on Instagram or Petonato Rob on Twitter. And where can you be found on those social media platforms, Dave?
There's at Batman Petrucci, and there's at Comics Reviews. Those are the two things.
Excellent. Yeah, so you follow us, Comics Reviews site, or Comics Reviews pages, and also our personal pages. That's whatever you want. Maybe do both. We all become best friends and love each other.
Just follow everybody.
Follow everyone.
But we got two listeners, I know that. Ryan and one listener, Mike.
It's true. and probably us when we listen to our own episodes. But
yeah.
So maybe four. Between two and four listeners.
Because
who knows if we actually listen.
I listen sometimes.
But yeah, so thank you everyone once again. Any questions for us, we would not mind answering on the podcast. You can write to us on our Facebook page or Twitter, whatever it is, and we'll read it and answer it on air. And but yeah, until next time, I'm Rob.
You're Rob.
And you are Dave.
That's true.